Hey, based on the base on the bottom. The last thing we learned is that at the time of the arguments of the Bnei HaChashmonai working at Sinaris Kabbalus, they cursed anybody who would teach his child Chochmat Yevanit. Now, we were medayek yesterday that Chochmat Yevanit did not refer to a type of learning, it referred to a type of language, which it accounts for this type of the Gemara's Kasha today. The Diyuk, that it's a reference to language, as opposed to a reference to learning, is that we always refer to the learning of the Greek as Chochmat Yevanit. Since we say Chochmat Yevanit, it's much, but there's a word here that's missing. So it's Chochmat Lashon Yevanit, for the reason. And therefore, the Gemara asks, Tanya, Omar Rebbe, the Eretz Yisrael Lashon Sursi Lama. Rebbe said, why in Eretz Yisrael should people speak Lashon Sursi? Lashon Sursi is like a Aramaic itself is viewed in the Torah as a bastard language because of its Yerida from Lashon HaKadosh. Lashon Sursi is a bastardized version of Lashon Arami, as Rashi points out. It's a Lashon Nil'ag, and that's actually the language of the Yerushalmi. So the question is, why would anybody want to speak that? Oh, Lashon HaKodesh, Sursi is the same as Syriac. When we say Syriac, Sursi. Yeah, that's what they spoke in Eretz Yisrael. The Yerushalmi is written in a sort of Ilgut. It's a very sweet language, the Yerushalmi. It was one of the strong differentiations between it and the Bavli. So the Tana Yerushalmi, or the Medaber Lashon Kalila. So here, why would you want to speak Sursi in Eretz Yisrael, speaking the Lashon HaKodesh or Lashon Yevanit? Lashon Yevanit, the Gemara now is assuming that Chochmat Yevanit is Lashon Yevanit, Mamish. Rehom Reb Yossi, the Bavel, Lashon Arami Lama. Why would anybody want to speak Aramaic in Bavel? Oh, Lashon HaKodesh or Lashon Parsi, those speak Persian, which is much nicer than Aramaic. Or, you know, Lashon HaKodesh even better. In any event, we see from here clearly that Lashon Yevanit is a recommended Lashon, as opposed to the Lashon of the street, which is Lashon Sursi. And you're telling me that they cursed anybody who spoke Lashon Yevanit? Says the Gemara, what's the kasha? There's two different issues over here. Lashon Yevanit lachud v'chachmat Yevanit lachud. It's not the same at all. It's a function of language, but it's a very special limud to be able to utilize that language in a way that gives over innuendos, hints, and information that are coded along with the language. Yes, but even Chochmat Yevanit mi'asira, can you say that they offered Chochmat Yevanit? V'amar of Yerom Meshmul Mishum Rabam Shimon Ben Gamlio. What's the pshat when it says, Eniyo l'lal nafshi, mikol benot iri? This is mashma, that there was something miyuchad. I'm a worse matzah than anybody else. My eyes were miserable for myself more than anybody else in my city. Rishon Gamliel said, this applies to our family. Elef Yeladim Hayu B'Beit Abba. And we, in the family of the Nesiyut, we had 1,000 of our children that were learning in Beit Abba. Chamesh Meot V'yam Lamdu Torah, Chamesh Meot Lamdu Chochmat Yevanit. 500 of them were in Cheder. 500 of them were being trained for political life to learn Chochmat Yevanit. Lo nishtayer mehem, and out of this entire family of 1,000 children, the only ones that are left now after the Churban is Ani Kan, I who live here in Eretz Yisrael, and I have a cousin, Ben Achiava, who lives in Asia. And that's it. But meanwhile, we see obviously that they had half of their children were being trained in the Chochmat Yevanit. So how could we possibly, that is the family of the Nasi, how could we possibly say that it was an Oror? And since the Gemara, that you're right, that it's a very special case. Shani Beit Rabbi Gamliel, Shayu Kovim Malkut. The house of Rabbi Gamliel was different because when they made the issue of learning Chochmat Yevanit, it was always in terms of those who didn't need it on behalf of the political needs of Klal Yisrael. But those who were Krovim or Malchus were never offered. Uchiratanya ha-misaper kumi ha-reza midarkei ha-mori. We have the same case by somebody who takes the haircuts of the Hare Krishna sect. So it's called Masapa Kuma. They cut off all the head in front, the hair in front, they had a minute, and let the hair hang down from the back. And that was also because of Dr. Aomori. It was a cultish kind of cut. But Aftumus Baru Ude, Nikirlo Masapa Kumi, Mashenkin Aftumus Baru Ude, who was the one who had, we learned before Me'ila, that he had succeeded in taking off the Gezerah about Midas that the Greeks had made. So, but he used to parade around as a non-Jew. And they were mocked at him to be Masapa Kumi, the Tejal Karov Lamalchut, and he needed to look not Jewish. Shabbat, huh? He was undercover. Shabbat Ram Ramil were not undercover. He Tilam Masapir Bukhmat Yivanit, next Krovim Lamalchut. So therefore, you can't ask a kasha from the Mishpacha Sanhedrin.
There's only two left out of the
thousand. Isn't that a pretty big problem? Yeah, but it was Chalon, the ones that were learning Torah also. So this is part of the Churban. That's what you're saying. Any other than Asher. This is Beitan.
And there's another one you said.
You mean it was part of the destruction of Beitan? You mean the overall crawling of the rebellion? Not Mamish Beitan. It's not that they were in Beitar, is it? They say that he was in Beitar?
It says that there were 400 Bunyan in Beitar, etc. And that's the only one left of all the Islam, and it could be just a later letter, isn't it?
But maybe those were only the ones that were learning Torah.
It doesn't work all the time. It's just somebody who accepts the Islam in Beitar.
Right.
I understand the parallel between 500 learned Torah and 500 Chokmah, if it's only a communicative language, it's not a parallel to learning Torah.
No,
no.
Torah is Lashon HaKodesh. Torah is Lashon HaKodesh, what Chokmah Yevanit is just the Lashon Yevanit. It's a very excellent parallel, as a matter of fact. Ein kamoh. Mamash Ein kamoh. It's one of the few places where we see a real insight into the relationship of Torah and language.
Which is why I like to hear
it. Because Lashon Yevanit, in Lashon, what's unique about Lashon HaKodesh is that it's coded. It isn't a normal language. So that's what's wrong with modern Hebrew, is that it attempts to use the words for Lashon HaKodesh as if it can communicate the way a normal language can communicate, and it can't because it simply doesn't have enough different roots. The roots, there's so many cognate roots that you can't give across separate meanings in using the words of Lashon HaKodesh in a modern language. That's why they're stuck with talking English all the time. 90% of the words in a modern Hebrew textbook are English, written in Hebrew letters. But the speech of Lashon HaKodesh is a coded language, exactly the same as Chokhmat Yevanit, where the words mean one thing, but the message means another. Like Lashon HaKodesh, like Torah, essentially. Yeah, the Rambam says it's the only other language that you could encode information the way you can encode in Lashon HaKodesh. But he says about both of these things, both about Chokhmat Yevanit in two separate places. About Chokhmat Yevanit, he says it's no longer known. And about Lashon Yevanit, that is kosher for Ksiva Sefer, says that Lashon Kvar Nishtekha. And what passes for Greek today does not qualify as Greek any more than what passes for Hebrew today should qualify for Lashon HaKodesh. It's basically a different language that uses similar word roots, but that has a whole different way of communicating. Just the opposite. If you knew Lashon HaKodesh, you wouldn't have to learn Torah. You'd already know Torah. What it is that Chazal teach us is how to read Lashon HaKodesh. When they make a diyuk, they're not teaching you Torah, they're teaching you Lashon HaKodesh. And that's the way the world was created. So the ksiva of the Sefer Torah in Lashon HaKodesh, what the goyim will say, look here, all of this nitpicking and so on. That's the way the language is spoken. That's like talking about in Shakespeare, that it's nitpicking because it's a simple ignorance of not recognizing that when you communicate in Lashon HaKodesh, these encoded words, that it says this here, and it says that there, and over there it says it there, that's exactly the way you speak the language, not reading into language. That's the mode of communication, which anybody who has any sense of Chazal immediately picks up. You need them to read this, and you immediately know, Ken Midrash Shimon. Because you know that this word always has to mean that in this context, and it immediately all is interrelated, interconnected. So it's a beautiful, beautiful, the Dafka, beautiful Hagbalah over here, the juxtaposition of the Kram Ishmael. Of why?
In the Hanukkah, why is it that it's made it?
Yeah, it's very interesting that we have immediately afterwards another tinus on the translation of the Chumash into Lashon HaKodesh immediately after Hanukkah. That's why. Well, you got Del Adamatak. That, by the way, that's why. That explains why you can't teach Lashon HaKodesh. That's all those Midrashim. Paro knew every language but Lashon HaKodesh, right? It sounds like a joke, so fine, so let him take another 2-week Berlitz course and he'll speak Lashon HaKodesh. What's the big deal that he, what do you mean? He had to make Yosef swear that he doesn't have to speak Lashon HaKodesh. Wait a minute, I can swear, make him sit down. Teach him Lashon HaKodesh, what's the big deal? A guy who can speak 70 languages can't figure out how to speak Lashon HaKodesh. They have these Thailand people picking up Hebrew in 2 days. Paro can't do it because it's not teachable. There's no way to teach it. You can teach a language, but you can't teach the richness of the interconnections until you spend all of that time learning them, right? And that, so that as many years as you're learning Torah, that's the richness of your Lashon HaKodesh. There's no course, accelerated course, to speaking Lashon HaKodesh. It's by definition impossibility. It's like trying to teach a life in an accelerated course. What are you supposed to do with it? It makes so much sense, all of these figures.
I think a lot of life in the cellar, I spent a week or
two, 1 hour. Lo yigadel adam et hakelev, ela im kein kashur b'shal shalaot. Then the Mishnah says, you're not allowed to raise a kelev unless it's tied up. Tanu rabbonim lo yigadel adam et hakelev, ela im kein kashur b'shal shalaot. Aval, yigadel b'yuhas mukhalek shvar, you are allowed to have a dog in a town that is near the border, where there's goyim around, you need a watchdog, and there you're allowed to actually release the dog from its chains at night. So matziro balayla, which you would not be allowed to do in the yishuv that isn't called the svar. Tanya rabbi Elazar hagadol omer, hamagadel klavim kimigadel chazirim. Someone who raises dogs is exactly the same as someone who raises pigs. Lamainap kamina, what's the difference? You say it's awesome. It's awesome. The makam of a ba'arur, the same curse that is given on those who say oror, shiyigad al-chazirim is oror, shiyigad al-klavim. Amr of Yezid, Amin Yomi, Amr of Nachman. Bavel, ki ir hasmucha l'shvar dami. Bavel is, for all intents and purposes, ir hasmucha l'shvar, and therefore you are allowed to release a dog at night in Bavel. Kirgama Nardah. Now we were Metargan that means not the entire Bavel, but rather Nardah. Some learned because Nardah was actually a Yisvar. That was what we're rationalizing. Other learns that not the situation, a political situation, not it was equivalent of an Yisvar. If you have anti-Semites about, you have gangs about, and so on, you need to have some vicious dogs about too.
So why are we comparing it to a
hundred? No, that's the places where it's not a Yisvar. So if it's not a Yisvar, the mean beauty. Uvnucho yomar. Shuva Hashem rivavot alfei Yisrael. So we see that in the Machane, Moshe Rabbeinu relates to the coming down of the Oren, in other words, the return of the Shekhinah, that he should be manche rivavot alfei. Now rivavot alfei equals 22,000, right? Because alfei is 2,000. Minimum is alfei is 2,000. Rivavot is 2 rivavot. Minimum 20,000. Equals 22,000. Well, lambda kasheina shtina shora Yisrael pachot mishnei alafim mishnei rivavot. This teaches us that you need to have a minimum of 22,000 people for hashra'at hashtina. Now, if that's the case, suppose, by the way, we find the same thing alfei shinan by the malachim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Machan and Lamala is also 22,000 minimum from the Neo. So this is Dafka, a very consistent Diyuk in some level of Hashra'at Hashchina. Obviously it doesn't mean every level of Hashra'at Hashchina, for which Shnayim Shigeshim and Lamed Tereshim, but Hashra'at Hashchina in terms of the Oren is what we're referring to here. There's many different levels of Hashra'at Hashchina. Now suppose you had Hare Shahu Yisrael Shnei Alafim Shnei Rivavot Chaser Echad. Let's say there was exactly 21,999 people. And here one woman is pregnant, ready to give birth to the next required individual, which will mean that there will be the Shekhinah. All of a sudden a dog barks at her. She gets terrified, drops her child. Aha! Look what having a dog can do. So, this causes a shiluk hashkinah. Very interesting, because when the shkinah appeared, no dog barked. It is by Mitzrayim. So there's that's the whole thing of the relationship to dogs, the whole issue of the hashkinah hashkinah and the yon navi bolayir, loving tohakim. Fine, that's every yon navi. I that there's a sensitivity to this element. He said the alat l'meifa v'u beita. There was a woman who went to her neighbor's house to bait, and novar bar kalba, and a dog that he was had in his house barked at her. Amala mare, so the owner said, Lord, just to me, don't be worried about him. Shkulei tivei, don't we've taken out his canines. Mare says also we took out his claws and we give up. Amri lei, so she said, well, you can take out your dear favors also and throw it into the thorns, because kvar nad vlad. My poor fetus is already on its way out. In portion nishbim leoni. Then the next day for the Mishnah is that our takonos says that you're not allowed to be porates a trap for yonim within shloshim weeks, which is 4 mil. And the reason for that was because we're afraid that you're going to end up capturing the birds of the people in town that are keeping birds in their pigeon cups. Check the Gemara. Whoever heard of birds traveling, or pigeons at least, traveling that far? Doesn't it say that in the other direction? If you want to set up a dovecot near a city where there's fields, you have to be marked 50 amas, that's all, from the field. Because otherwise you're going to be marked to the fields and bringing these birds. Birds are going to be going into the fields and eating all the time. But 50 amas is sufficient. So obviously they don't fly 4 kilometers. They fly very far. But they're filled up with the food that they eat within 50 amas. So they're not going to, once you market 50 amas from a field, you're not going to be causing damage to that field. On the other hand, in terms of somebody setting out traps that could catch the bird, if it's less than shloshim reis away, it might be catching your bird. Correcting more so than why only shloshim reis. I mean, pigeons can travel for thousands of miles. But Tanya, the yeshuva people may have meal on your throats. And if you're in a place where there's yeshuva, there's a place where the bird would be attracted to flying, so then even if it's 100 miles away, you can't be poreish. So how do you explain it? Says Rabbi Yosef, doesn't mean any yeshuva. It's not that the yeshuva where there might be a chance of domesticated birds around. What it means is be yeshuv where there are stopping points that a bird would fly to and then fly on. It's be yeshuv kramim, or rab omer be yeshuv shofim. It could also mean that it's yeshuv where there are various stopping places for birdhouses on the way. Oh, I understand. If there's birdhouses on the way, then anyway, you'd have to be marking from those birdhouses. So the point is saying, if there's a yeshuv kramim, you can't even 100 mil. Anyway, wherever you're telling it, shloshim reis between each birdhouse, right? So that needs to feel that it has a stop. It needs to feel comfortable, secure with where it's going. But if that's the case, and there obviously are birds, anyway, that you'd have to be careful about within shloshim reis. So what's the point of saying 100 miles if it's yeshuv kramim? Typically, mishum the shofkin gufayu. How about those birdhouses themselves? Well, either you might send it to the could be talking about Goyesha birds. I mean, not going to be catching Goyesha birds, right? You might say a bit of hefker, or these may be old houses that are no longer, people are no longer using, but the birds use them. You might say a bit of day, or for that matter, maybe his own. Suppose you own birds. You don't mind if you catch your own birds. But you're still not allowed to be mopped as a nishkin for them to catch birds if they're within a place where birds from the town could have flown out to. And since those birds will take advantage of your birdhouses, then you have to be marked yet again from there. Because other people's birds will be there, even 100 miles away. That's the difference.
The problem over here is the mesh. Can you have birdhouse?
The problem is what?
It's the trap.
Yeah.
Can I have a birdhouse in my backyard?
Birdhouse is on a trap?
A show hook.
A show hook is on a trap? So how?
It's a show hook from a year from each other. I don't know.
Yeah, confusing two things. One is that if I'm setting up a birdhouse, I have to make sure it won't damage other people's fields. That's a different case. The case of the mission is if I'm trapping birds, I have to make sure it's not going to catch other people's birds.
But
no, two different issues. The only question is the relationship is that it seems to imply that it would be you would think it would be similar because of the distance. That's the only reason we brought it in. That we would go for right away. It's not similar. Adrian Allah Maruda. Wonderful.
What are they doing in the backyard?
What's wrong with having a show up? As long as you're not damaging other people's property. You can if there's somebody has a field there, then you have a problem. But it's only Hamishimama. But it's only Hamishimama. Who's got a field with Hamishimama?
Right.
That's right. No. That's okay. You're not taking them. You know, it's like you're not.
What do they tell the person to do in order not to trap birds?
Don't put out traps.
So he can't even put them out from his own zone then?
No, he's got to go in and take grab them from his own. Where's he have to trap them? If he's raising birds, he can collect them. He doesn't trap.
So you shouldn't put out traps at all?
If it's within 4 kilometers of somebody's birdhouse. Because then how do you know you're not taking it? The distance. Moving on now from Geneva and from the minimum of Geneva, which includes of course the likelihood of coming to blows as well, but the set up, not so much logistically, although they're already shown in the suggest that it's a logistical issue and that you go from Geneva you can come to Havola, but it's actually set up in terms of the furthest to the closest of the direct hezek of the other. In other words, the furthest hezek are the various others, the zikim that don't include Adam. That's the way the beginning of the Mishnah, if you recall, was set up as well. We went to 4 avos l'zikin, to 13 avos l'zikin, to 42 avos l'zikin. In other words, each one of them expanded our concept of hezek. We started with the idea of momen hamazik, which is far from the other. That's called mazik. We don't really view Adam per se as a mazik, because he puts himself into the context of the mazik. Then we went into the Adam himself was mazik, which included the Genevas, the Chabolites, and so on. And then we went into Shomachinam Shomachach, which becomes now Bab Metzia. But that was at the introduction of Baba Kama. And we're sticking, basically, to the way that we originally kept expanding the vision of torch. Because usually we don't include Adam in a concept of torch. And the thing is just a concept of Mizikin. So the elements of the Zikin that are most fundamental and also most complex in terms of the interrelationship of the elements of society, the most fundamental is the rights of ownership and the responsibilities of ownership. And that brings us directly to the moment of Mazik, which is the way that the Torah identifies the whole issue initially in Mishpatim. It's all about Ba'alut and what Ba'alut leads you to and what Ba'alut demands. The direct concept of Adam as a mazik is not necessarily a function of society. I mean, it goes back to, you know, to Cain the Hevel. But the idea of the complexity and the subtleties of interrelationship is a moment of mazik idea. We start with that, and then we go, okay, somebody wants to kill somebody else. We'll get to that at the end. And then it's left also. Well, now we go to the next level up, less fundamental. If somebody damages somebody else, he attacks his body, there's 5 separate payments that he has to pay. There's the Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Beshevet, Uboshet. Now we're going to take each one of those separately. The Nezek. When we say Nezek, what exactly, how do we estimate damages to a person? Well, we certainly can't say that, give the guy whatever he would be willing to take for a limb. In other words, because that's a... That is something that it's already been done. Now the question is what do you pay for it? The Torah is not machayev you for what the other person would have wanted. just the way civil courts work. And gosh, just think of what this person has gone through and so on and so forth. Okay? But there, here there's an objective standard for nezer. What is that standard? Ketzad shimat eino kitzat yado shiberet raglo. So he blinds him, he cuts off his hand, breaks his leg, whatever it is. How do we estimate objectively that value? What we look at is ro'ino tot ilu hu eved hanimkar b'shuk. What we want to see is, what is this person worth in terms of his value on the open market? And that value, as a person, being sold as a person, that value is an expression of what he is worth objectively. The difference between his objective worth before, which is the way that the market will define his usefulness, and therefore the usefulness of this particular part of him that's lost. He now lost a hand. In objective terms, I, as a buyer, am going to pay a lot less for an eved without a hand. That's an objective value. That's what a hand is worth. Same thing an eye. Now, obviously, that depends, again, on how much that hand is trained and so on and so forth. It's all included. But what would I pay for a nuclear physicist with an eye? And so on. But that's all included. So Mimela, I have a built-in definition of values. Now, there is a little bit of a problem over here, in that Rashi says that the value that we're talking about over here is the value that he has lost in being able to sell himself. Now the problem is, if he sells himself, he can only sell himself as an Eved Ivri. There's also a problem, by the way, in Rashi, because it says in the Mishnah, Nimkar B'Shuk. And there's no such thing as Nimkar B'Shuk, an Eved Ivri, right? Which some learn that Rashi has a different Gersa, but it did not say Nimkar B'Shuk. In fact, there are Gersas in the Mishnayos that leave out Nimkar B'Shuk. Almost all of the Rishonim are cholik on Rashi. And they point out that a Nimkar B'Shuk is only a local cost, because you can only sell yourself for 6 years. So how are you going to define permanent damage in terms of a sale for 6 years? That doesn't make any sense. The only way to do it would be to analyze what the real market, in other words, pretend. You know, the same way you're pretending he's an Eved Ivri, pretend he's an Eved Kanani. I mean, why can't you see what he would be worth on an open market, which is what Nimkar B'Shuk means, which is not the case of an Eved Ivri whose sale has to be done in private and so on. It's private placement, and and it's a whole different way of evaluating. And the mashmos is that according to Rashi, we're looking at real loss, not just a way to estimate loss. And this leads us to another question. That was, you can't really sell yourself as an Eved Kanani. He says, well, there's no real loss. So why would you pay it at all? Which leads us to another issue. Is nezek, in fact, a real payment for loss, or is nezek a knas? The Rambam has an incredible shita that says that if a guy has made it any damage, he doesn't pay nezek. Because nezek, there is no loss that's definable in nezek. Just in Patera, we'll see the basis for his limud later on in the Gemara. So, I mean, according to that, then it's just a question, how do we analyze this in Enoch Inami? Of course we would look to see what he's worth as an Eved Kanani. Why would we look at Eved Ivri? But if we're talking about a real loss, what can I, as a person, say that I lost today? I lost my ability to privately place myself with someone for X amount of dollars. I can't get that amount of dollars anymore. So that's a real loss. Right? So that would be an evidence nimka, but not shuk.
What's
the difference between this and evaluation? There's no connection between them at all. Erechim, you probably don't mean erechim, you probably mean dummim. Erechim has nothing to do with that. You mean a dummim evaluation?
Yeah.
That depends. If it's an evaluation for the way Rashi's blaming it, then it's a totally different thing. But there it's a statement where the person was b'chayev himself as a theoretical value. Whatever my theoretical value would be on an open market, that's what I'll give to Haggish. It's just like a meta. It doesn't have to be a real no, because over here we're looking for real loss. There is no such real loss. It can't be sold.
This is what this value is to the individual, right?
Yes.
But can that
adjust
because every year the
money
market would have a different
effect? That's true about every loss. True about your car.
Right.
It's the same as any other loss. The market finds its own value at the time. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the discussion, whether it's the time of Amud of the Din, the time of the Din, that's Shalab Chas and the Veil, all of those dinners are included in that discussion, obviously. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what about Tsar? How do we define tsar? Well, let's say there's no nezek at all that's involved. Divorce, let's just have a laboratory case, no nezek. So let's say a guy was kav odish, there'll be much nezek. Somebody takes a hot piece of metal and touches your fingernail, all right? It gives you a lot of pain, or it takes a sharp point, bashes you on your fingernail. There's no discernible nezek, but there's tsar. How would we define that? Mokam she'eno sechabura. From din kama adam peyotze b'zerot sheli tol liyot b'tzpa'akav, we estimate how much a person like this would take to suffer that pain. Now, the Gemara is going to discuss how we can objectively define that, and it turns out to be a very objective definition, in a sense. It's the payment for anesthesia, which we'll see. But here the question is, what is meant by Adam Kayotze Bezeh? That seems to be a machlokes Rishonim. Do we take into consideration how much money he has and how much he would be willing to spend?
That's what Adam Bezeh means.
No, that would be included. It would also include his sensitivity to pain, his pain threshold. The more spoiled he is, and the more unused he is to pain, so the lower is his pain threshold. And that, therefore, he'd be willing to pay more money to get out of his pain. But do we include also the financial element? No, if somebody desperately needs money, he's not going to. So it's a whole different idea. So the Rambam says we have to take a look at his financial situation as well. Rashi learns it's a question of how unad he is, how spoiled he is, how unused to paying he is.
What are the words?
We'll see how much he would take to suffer that pain. So the Gemara is going to discuss what that means. Replay, and when we talk about. We talk about repay, which means pay for medical costs. Well, he calls Hayavarakoto. You have to pay for all the doctors. Alabot Machim. And for that matter, if there were secondary effects, so let's say that now there was an infection, the whole area becomes covered with cysts and so on, Imachmatamaka, even though it's not directly in the maka, it can be traced to the maka, you have to pay for that too. Well, don't take a look at that as a groma. That's part of the actual damage. If we can't trace it to the makah, then we'll have to assume it's coincidental in your profit. Suppose it appears to heal and then it starts once again bleeding or it becomes pus-filled or whatever. How many times this happens, you're chayav l'rafoto, unless it can be determined that it's completely healed. And now there's a coincidence again, which has nothing to do. It might have been nigram because of the original weakness. But there was a complete healing, so then if it was how about shevet? Now shevet, we have a problem. Shevet means loss of income. The problem is that a certain element of the loss of income has already been included in the fact that we've paid for the loss of the organ that was your income source. Right? So in other words, if you are a diamond worker and you lost your hand, now when we paid you for the hand, we're already paying your loss of income, because that was included in the way in which we figure what you would be worth. Obviously, people are willing to pay for you because you generate income, right? So if you've already paid that, how can you analyze separately what your loss of income is? Very simple. What we do is we take a look at your new situation and what you're now capable of. So now you don't have any hands. Okay, so what are you capable of? You may be capable of being a scarecrow. Maybe you could say boo every time a crow comes down, right? You scare the crows away. There's a certain salary that's paid for scarecrows too. So that's what we analyze. And the number of hours of work that you miss in your new job as scarecrow, that's what he'll pay you. So Roina Tokyo Shomer Kishurin, this guy's a cucumber or a garden watcher. Shikvar Natsamo, the Mayor Dover, the Mayor Aglo, we've already paid you for the loss of income that you were capable of making. Now we're going to pay you for the total loss of income during the time that you're ill and can't work. That's your new income potential.
Hmm? But this is just
for
the disability
insurance.
You're not paying.
Right. Well, no, really disability insurance. Yes, that element of disability, the disability insurance for the loss of a limb, does pay for the rest of your life. I'm saying it's the wrong term, but yes, that idea for while you're unemployed. But what you're paid for while you're unemployed is not your previous level of employment. It's your new level of employment. They've already paid you for your previous level of employment. But
these American court payments
are absurd.
Has nothing to do with, and they're just beyond.
Well, American core payments include elements of Shabbat as well, but
on the high of, you know, hundreds of millions, whatever.
For pain and suffering and atonement.
And the tribes been given their life and earning all this money from selling, would have been earning for the rest of his life to be without the 25%.
Well, we do that, but the way we do that is in the sale of an Eved, according to the other Rishonim, which is a permanent sale. And that's the best way to define what the market will bear. I mean, how do we know what kind of job you're going to get? But we do know, what would someone invest in owning you? That's the best possible thing. We don't have an equivalent today. But that is the perfect market determination. If I want to buy the rights to your income, how much would I pay? Right? Now, buying you as a slave is buying you for the rights to your income. So if that's what I'm looking for, then that's a perfect way to analyze it. Like this, you're just saying, well, who knows, maybe you'll get this kind of check. But that's all maybes. Maybe he'll get sick. Maybe he won't be able to work. Man, there's lots of maybes. If you want to determine it, you have to look at his work as a commodity. What's the commodity work market worth for this potential? Which includes all the risks and so on and so forth. That's how you build commodities. And then the market finds its own value, which is perfect. That's realistic. Everything else is just, well, maybe. And may be completely off balance. The guy may turn out to have a heart attack next year and he won't have any income. Correct, but that's all maybes. In other words, we're talking about actual loss now. To discuss actual loss now, we can only analyze it in terms of how the market will find a value for potential, not actual. And whenever I'm willing to sell that, by the way, when I'm making a company, I believe that this company has the ability to make me $1 million a year. Nonetheless, if I'm going to evaluate it for somebody else, I'm saying, okay, look, I need cash. How much are you willing to buy this company? He says, well, you know, yeah, I understand. It may make me $1 million a year. It may also lose me $1 million a year. And therefore, this is what I'm willing to pay for the company for X percentage of the company. That's a realistic appraisal. It's not a hopeful appraisal. It's not an unhopeful appraisal. It's how much I'm willing to invest in the chance of taking. That's a real loss if I destroy that company. So every person essentially is a company. This is the only way to evaluate is real loss. What would you invest in this person? So this is actually beautiful. It's a shame that we don't really have ways of locking up this type of evaluation. So the courts are left with just, you know, vague assessments. Because there's no market. If we could just reinstate the slave market, then we would be able to fix the whole legal system. That's when it started falling apart. All right, says the Gemara. Where do we get this idea about paying damages? Now, the truth is that question is a very profound question, because it takes into consideration this whole discussion of the Rambam and so on. We're not really able to pay somebody for his eye. So when you're talking about paying him money, in what sense does that make up for the loss of an eye? Somebody would say, what's your eye worth to you? I mean, he'll say it's worth infinity. You can't pay me enough to take my eye. I mean, what kind of business to say, I'll pay you for your eye? But that's all an eye is? Income production? So why don't we actually look at the verses of the Torah and say that they mean it seriously? That this is punitive. It's not meant to make up for the loss. And if it's punitive, then when the Torah says ayin tachat ayin, how do we know that it doesn't mean ayin tachat ayin?
Okay.
Did I skip Boshet? I'm so sorry. Boshet, akol lefi ha-mivayesh va-mitbayesh. When it comes to Boshet, now Rashi says akol lefi ha-mivayesh means the lower class of person is the worse as Boshet is, and ha-mitbayesh, the higher class of person is the worse as Boshet is. But we'll see that that's not necessarily true in all cases, and so on. We'll discuss this later. But anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So how do we know? Ema ayin tachat ayin amar rachmana, and that means literally, Ema, ayin mamish. Why shouldn't we accept it as being literal? What gives us the idea that the truth is, of course, as the Rambam points out, that there was never a Bezdin, the most Moshe Rabbeinu, that ever had bounded otherwise. It's clearly the understanding of the Pashas of the Prophet that was given over on Har Sinai. But whenever the Gemara asks a question like this, it's to ask, what is there in the Torah that says this? Was it has no relationship to what the Pusik is saying? What does it mean when it says ayin da'as ayin? Says the Gemara Lo Shalkadek. It can't mean literally ayin da'as ayin. And we're going to have many approaches that will show us this. This is the first of them. But again, it's not that there's any real consideration of the issue. It's a question of where we find the idea in the Torah. And there are differences in understanding the nature of Kashrut, including the Rambam's difference, depending on how we understand the remez in the Torah to ayin da'as ayin and what it means.
Sure.
No, because the pasuk going out of Pshuto could mean, remember, in Lashon HaKodesh, again, the meaning of ayin tachat ayin, which means to replace, right, it automatically tells you that if I'm using the word tachat, it doesn't mean like it's translated in English, an eye for an eye. It's a complete misreading of the whole meaning of the word tachat in Hebrew. It's like, that doesn't mean he brought the isle for his son. It means in place of. So ayin tachat ayin, even the passage of the prophet means an eye in place of an eye, which means that what the Torah is essentially telling him is, what you need to do is take out your eye and give it to him. Now, so what does that mean? Right? It means I have to look for replacement on some level. The only level of replacement I can possibly give is an objectively defined replacement. I mean, because I can't really replace it. So that's given in the language. That is the pashtus. But nonetheless, because we can read it either way, I mean, so how do we know to look at it specifically in terms of the analog of tashlumim? Maybe it means I should be his guide for the rest of his life and be his eye. It could mean anything. So what is to tell us? We want to see where the Torah is really telling us that the analog of Kachlumen, which is only an analog. I mean, it's a far-fetched analog. We're so used to the American way of looking at things in which everything is money that we don't recognize how far-fetched it is. But the truth is, I mean, if you come as a primitive human being, you think, well, what do you mean money? What does money have to do with the loss of my eye? What do you mean you're going to give me money for the loss of my eye? That's crazy. That has nothing to do with my eye.
But it's damages, right? I mean,
again, that's because of the idea you're thinking in American terms of damages. Remember that doesn't, yes, we're going to analyze that in a moment, the relationship to the shore, exactly. That's what we will do. But over there, the truth is, you're going a little bit way off, but the truth is that it's even true about a shore in the ultimate sense. That's why the Torah always talks about damages as personal. The Torah never discusses an abstraction called damages. It talks about the guy's shor. And therefore we have the different types of whether it's a shor or whether it's a seh. Because the idea, there's no such thing in Lashon HaKodesh as impersonal ownership. The word for ownership is be'ilah, which is about as personal as you can get. Right, so it's always husbandry. There's no concept of a personal ownership. That's why in the Torah, ribbish of an impersonal ownership. That's why in the Torah, ribbish is prohibited, whereas in the West, it's the essence of all commerce. Because in the West, the point is the value. The thing that I own is the value. So obviously, I can rent the value out. Obviously, I could sell the value. To say that I don't have that means I don't have anything. What else do I have? Whereas by Yidden, it's the exact opposite. What I don't have is that I never own really the value. That's just the potential. I own the actualization of that value. I can't sell you that, which is the abstraction of it, and say any money that you make out, anything that comes of it, any concrete thing that comes of it is yours, but you have to pay me for the raw value. That whole idea is built into the concept of the Zikin as well. So that's why it's so interrelated in Mishpatim. The concept of what I can do with my money and how I have to pay for torts are very interrelated. But it's a completely different way of viewing ownership, money, society, and so on than the Glaish way. Right? It demands personal involvement. Lagavi investments, it's the same thing. It destroys the concept of banks. where the banking system is almost set up in such a way to destroy borrowers, and it builds the system of venture capital, which I risk my money to work with you, but you taking my money don't take any risk. Now, obviously, I'm not going to take a risk unless I think that it's valuable. So I have to put myself into it. If the company begins to fail, I have to say, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go to work for them. I don't want to lose my money. I'm going to have to invest myself in them and so on. So that creates a market in which serious people that have serious talents are capable of identifying talents, analyzing what they're worth, and investing in them. But the investment in them is their own investment. It's much more personal and much more likely to succeed. See, I have only one standard when I lend money in a bank. How much does this guy own that I can steal from him to make sure I get it back? That's all. I couldn't care less whether he's going to survive, he's not going to survive, whether I'm lending him the money, knowing, giggling in the back, oh, God, this is the dumbest investment I ever heard of. Fine with me. I make 10% a year on it, so there's no problem for me. That whole viciousness, I also get to cut out. You know, it's almost like a cliche about the banker who's coming, you know, the vicious banker who has no interest in his victim. So here too, how do we know what it means? Says the Gemara, let's talk about it. There's no way to think that ayin tachas ayin means anything but money. The tani yochos simeit eino mishaneit eino kikat yado mekateat yado shiveret raglo mishaveret raglo. You might think that what we do is we say it's an eye for an eye. We do the same thing back to you simply for punitive reasons. Talmud lomar, therefore the Torah said makke adam umakke behema. Now it doesn't really say makke adam umakke behema anywhere, but the Gemara is going to talk about what your reference is a little bit later. But first, we say, okay, there's some type of gzeira shava apparently over here that tells me that just like, and this is what David initially suggested, just like we find the idea of haka and the zikin by a behema, which certainly means tashlumim there, af make adam no tashlumim. Ve'im nafshe kolomar, and if you have a problem with this, and the Gemara is going to say, what's the problem? We haven't identified what the limit is yet to talk about what the problem is. But if you have a problem with this, I'll tell you. It also says, Hare'u Omer, v'lo tikhu chofer l'nefesh rotseach asher hu rasha lamut. You cannot take chofer for the nefesh of a rotseach who is meant to die for what he did. Which means lenefesh rotseach specifically yatalokeach kofer. It's only for someone who has murdered and therefore has gone out of the realm of any type of analog. Then you don't take money to make up for what he did. But for anything less than murder, even though it's a loss, which is a partial murder, you murdered the guy's eyes, or you murdered the echod mikhof dala de rosh evarim she'inam chozrim. This, we're borrowing this term from Taras, where we have rosh evarim. Obviously, there's no meaning to rosh evarim when it comes to nezek. I mean, well, who cares? But these are tips. Now we're calling them tips because when it comes to Taras, we're interested in tips. Only because legabe Taras, if you can't see the entire Taras at one time, then you're not able to be matami certain types of Taras, right? Because I can't see it, so that's only in rounded tips. So we call them Chav Dalet Roshe Evarim. No. It actually means Roshe Evarim over here. But obviously, in terms of the actual halacha, the Gabi Nezek has nothing to do with Roshe Evarim. It could be the whole Aver, and we could be talking about not even an Aver. I mean, we're talking about parts of the torso that are damaged and so on. So. This idea is a borrowed idea. So Avalatat Rokeach called for Rosh Eivarim Shenam Chozrim, but you can take for Rosh Eivarim. Okay? So now, let's analyze it. You say it says Maka Adam Maka Behema. Where does it say that? Hi Maka. Which part are you referring to? In your Lema, are you talking about the strange discussion that comes after the Makalel, which, by the way, includes being Maka HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kalayachol. Right? It's a Yaka Yossi of Yossi. Very strange. We call the Din of Mekalo blasphemy HaKor as well. For some reason, after the Din of Mekalo, the Torah throws in all of the Din of HaKor. So it has that whole parasha in which it says, among other things, מכה בהמה ישמנה, ומכה אדם ימות. So there we have, clearly it's putting together מכה בהמה and מכה אדם. So it's saying, the מכה אדם should be יומת. So are you telling me that when it says יומת, it means, doesn't mean to die? I thought, oh, who did Felixi? That is talking about מכה אדם, the side of Misa. And you couldn't possibly mean that we're comparing someone who's high of Misa to Makeh Behemah, and he'll only pay, and he won't actually be fire. Now you'll notice, by the way, that the Diyuk of Lotuka Kofa, the Nefesh Latreyas, is strongly supportive of the Rambam. Because they're saying, you can take Kofa Lenefesh Latreyas, you can't take Kofa Lenefesh Latreyas, but you can take Kofa. But Kofa is a class. So that means that the Torah is saying essentially is that we are redeeming, in the same way that the Torah said, if you own a shor that kills somebody else, you should die. But in kofar, you shatalav, right? So then you can redeem your life with the kofar. So here too, that idea is I'm redeeming with the tashlum of the kofar, so to speak. So it's not that I'm not even really paying an analog. What I'm really doing, it is indeed, in a sense, punitive, and therefore it's not. But it's a punitive that's measured by what I caused in terms of this nezek. See, so if I go ahead and I'm moda, I should be potter. And there's a beautiful Meshech Chacham who points out that it always talks, when it comes to the adam, it always talks in the passive sense. Like Asher Asah, Ken Ye Aselo. Always use it so it shall be done. Why? That's Shabbat. Because you can't do it to yourself. Because the Meida will be puzzled. It's only what Bezin will do to him, which itself indicates that the Knazaka. Mom's a classic Meshech Chachma, analyzes every puzzle. It's always in the passive voice. And when it comes to Behemah, it's always in the active voice. Right? So does Yishamena? Yumat. It's amazing. It's Mom is consistent throughout. Okay, so if that's the case, that cannot be the mukkah of the drasha, because Makadam Yumat is, of course, not talking about a case of nezik. It's talking about a case of Tzi of Misa. And according to Gemara Sanhedrin, the Tzi of Misa that's referring to over here is hitting a parent. Right? But that's not the point. It's definitely talking about real Yumat. Okay, Elamihocha. The correct pasuk would actually be a earlier pasuk that says umaken nefesh beimah yishalmena nefesh tachas nefesh, and then the next pasuk continues the ish yitein mum ba'amito kasher asa ken yeyaseh lo. Notice again the passive voice, as he has done so shall be done to him, and therefore those two took him are the hakor that we darshan before. It doesn't say the word hakor. That's hakor. There's no word makeh nefesh. It's only by the animal it says makeh nefesh behemah. By the ish it says ish ki yitein mum ba'amito. How can you compare makeh, makeh adam, makeh behemah, barnea? You have much too concentration on your face there. So how do you explain that? Well, it's the Gemara. No. We don't need the word makeh. We mean the idea of akaha, akaha. I mean, we know that you can darshan in Zereshava, conceptual Zereshava. You don't need an actual verbal Zereshava. So we have, well, there's conceptual Zereshava. I mean, just like the akaha that is mentioned by a behemah means the tashlumim, so too, wow, hafakaha morava adam, so too means the tashlumim. I guess we better. I didn't mean to stop. I just meant to check that I have enough. We have a big stop tomorrow too. So, but okay, if we take on a little bit more, let's just give it 5 more minutes. So therefore, since the Gemara is talking about Akah, just like Akah that says by Behema means the Tashlumim, so too Akah that it says by Adam means the Tashlumim. Correct the Gemara, doesn't it say Befeirsh Ish Kiyake Kol Nefesh Adam Mot Yumat? Doesn't it say he should die? By the way, there are some who mamish take out this whole piece because it doesn't add anything. So they say that this piece is a mistake, and it doesn't, the Girsa doesn't appear at all. But okay, there's a whole discussion of what would be the new thing. But doesn't it say motumat? No, that means bemoma. Means you should die, meaning through pain. What do you mean? What's the faith of the mama? Maybe it means you should be killed. Unless I could die there. Can't mean that. First of all, because it says the parish that we have our Zerushava, Makabahema Yeshalmena. Besides, it says the parish kasher yitain mumba adam kenina tenbo. It certainly is not referring to dying. Therefore, it's got to be referring to mom. Okay, now getting back to our original drasha, we said, if you have a problem with the drasha that I just gave you, then we have an additional solution from the halacha of lotikul kofer l'nefeshot seah. Now, my imatshachalomar, what additional thing could you have asked? I tell you, because there's an additional question. What do you say? It says hakor by Adam, and it says hakor by behemoth. It also says hakor by an Adam that's mechayev actual killing, right? We're over there. It says yumat. So my chazit yalat mimaka behemoth leilas mimaka adam. How do we know that it shouldn't be tachas ishti yakeko nefesh adam, that we should actually die most yumat? I mean, that's talking about the killing. We want to be done in the Zikin and the Zikin. We don't want to be done in the Zikin from Misa. Why? Hadarabha. Let's don Hakov Adam from Hakov Adam and not don Hakov Adam from Hakov Mibahima. I mean, doesn't that make more sense? That's why it says, if you have a problem with this Russia, he shall surely die. This teaches us, "Lenevesh lo treach yatalokeach kofer, aval atalokeach kofer roshei avarim she'inam chozrim." You can take kofer for roshei avarim. But doesn't lotikhu kofer lenevesh lo treach come to tell me something more fundamental than that? Is it coming in due to mutei roshei avarim with the asa? Ani boile, do we not need it for the following? Biomer achmana lo ta'avid beitarte. Don't do two separate things. Meaning, don't also kill the guy and make him pay at the same time. So lotikhu kofer means don't take money in addition to killing him. Me only motumat. No, I know that from Kidei Rishato. That's the famous halacha that you're not mamis and mishalim. So that already is included in there that we don't do something. We don't give malchus and tashlumi. Okay, but I still need it for the simple meaning, don't I? I can't be very late to come on a lotishko mamon v'tisere. Doesn't the Torah have to say, don't take money to popular man? What else is it supposed to tell you? Why does that mean that, but for other things you can take money? No, because if that's all it meant to say, couldn't it say, l'shtavachon a lotishko kofer l'asheru rasha l'mot? Don't take kofer for someone chayav misha. Why does it say, don't take kofer l'nefesh roteach asheru rasha l'mot l'mot? Therefore, we also have this additional deal. The nefesh roteach yatalokeach kofer, aval atalokeach kofer l'roshei evarim, she'enam chozrim. But if that's the case, if indeed we could learn it out from here, what's the point of that whole first drasha of makeh makeh? Just leave it at this, and that would be sufficient. So makeh makeh l'amali, amri. Imi hai havamina, it would be only from here, I would have said, then you have a choice. Iboy ain't no native. Iboy deme ain't no native. The guy could say, look, I don't have any money. Blind me. He says, you're giving me an option. He said, look, you could call for. I don't want to take off for. Kamash Malan, now that we know that the Torah doesn't mean Misa, and it allows Kashlumim, now we learn from Behema that you don't have options. Just like Market Behema is only with Kashlumim, so too is Market Adam only with Kashlumim.